in the window, Joe. In the bathroom window. I saw what you did to that girl.
Oh.
Oh. Oh. For God's sake, Joe. You cut her to pieces.
Now, you just busted loose out of the state asylum.
Escaped?
He killed two wardens on the way and went over a barbed wire fence like it wasn't there. Australia?
Yeah.
Weren't they all criminals or something?
Like I said, I seem to attract the wackos of this world.
Pregnant by that maniac of a husband of mine.
He seems such a normal sort of person.
Yeah, well, most maniacs do. They don't exactly go through life with a neon sign blinking, I'm a lunatic.
Good night, Kathy. Vermouth. Vermouth.
Oh, Gwen went away. Yes, indeed.
To heaven?
No. No, she was a filthy slut.
I can't stand the thought of him still being out there somewhere, Cheryl.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And indeed it does. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 136. And this time we're going to be jet-setting from Texas to Sydney with the PJ Souls little scene, PJ Souls slasher, Innocent Prey. So it's a little bit more obscure, but it's worth hunting down. In fact, the whole film is actually on YouTube if you did want to watch it. It's well worth a view. Or is it? Well, we'll be discussing that shortly. We've also got apparently the quiz to end all quizzes, although I'm not entirely sure if that's going to be true. It sounds like it's... well, we'll see. But Joseph's got one of his cunning quizzes up his sleeve, and apparently it's going to be a battle off between myself and Eric to see who's quiz champion. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not really doing the quiz, right?
No, you are, but apparently somebody's worked out the algorithms and stuff and says that whoever wins this one is going to be quiz champion.
Well, it's going to be me.
Oh, well, I will see. Well, it's also it's funny talking about vermouth in that as the sound clip before. I'm a little bit hungover, which probably puts me at a disadvantage for the quiz. I was at a wedding yesterday and probably drank a little bit too much vermouth.
Of course, you're at a wedding.
Well, I was.
It wasn't just. Hang on, I saw on pictures on Facebook of you put on Susie albums at like 11 o'clock at night.
Eh? That was Friday night.
Oh, was it? Oh, oops.
Yeah, exactly. So. But I was at a wedding yesterday, so yes, so a little bit too much good cheer, which probably gives Eric an advantage. So if I do lose, I've got something to blame.
Well, that and the fact that I'm better than you at everything. So
well, here we go. Yes, so Joseph, we shall be coming on to that a little bit later. But in time honored tradition, let's talk about what we've been watching recently. Well, Joseph, would you like to go first?
Sure. The only thing I've watched, what did I watch? I watched something else, but I watched Kong Skull Island, which I really enjoyed. It's everything a giant monster movie should be, as opposed to the recent Godzilla reboot, which was not everything it should be. And Kong Skull Island is in the same... I guess you'd call it cinematic universe. So, because I do believe they're going to pair those two up eventually, Godzilla and King Kong. But I really enjoyed this one. It's really dumb. It's dumber than a bag of rocks, actually. But, you know, lots of great giant monster action set on an island. I mean, that's the gist of it. That's the whole story right there. I mean, there's not really much else to say except that I enjoyed it a lot. Some great special effects and a lot of fun.
Okay, I've not. It's out here at the moment, but I've not gone to see it. I'm not sure if I'll bother at the cinema. But anyone else seen that?
Nathan saw it.
I saw it.
Yeah. Did you like it? Do you watch it in 3D?
I did. I watched it in 3D. I really, really enjoyed the movie. I mean, the 3D's not bad, but it's not. Again, it's not the kind of 3D where you know, stuff's flying out of the screen that much. So if, you know, if you just want to see, you know, great depth, blah, then go see it in 3D. But if you like the gimmicky stuff like I do, then I wouldn't spend the extra money.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know you like things poking you in the face, Nathan, don't you?
Yes.
Big bits of rhubarb.
Yeah, exactly.
And other things that are long and thin and covered in skin, red in parts, and go in tarts.
Pardon? I'm going to have a rhubarb fit because I was reading what our listeners were saying, and it's like, who do you think will win the quiz? And like 10 people responded, and one person picked me. Everybody else is picking between you two. Oh my God, I'm going to throw rhubarb at all our listeners for like having no faith in me whatsoever.
Fuck you, come on your business.
Yeah.
It could be, it could get messy. Thank you, Joseph. Anything else?
I rewatched Slither, but I'm not going to talk about that because I've already talked about that before. But that's it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Nathan, how about you? Been watching any good rhubarb?
No, I haven't watched any Rhubarb Lady clips lately. Last night I've been watching Feud. You know, Betty and Joan, that new show that's come out. And Wes is watching it with me, so he had never seen Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. So he said, you know, I kind of want to watch that. So we watched it last night. You know, it's, I mean, what can you say about it? It's a classic. I mean, everybody's heard of that movie. It's, I mean, I really liked the movie. You know, if I had any negative things to say, it would probably be that it's a little too long. I think that it probably, you know, could be edited down a little bit to make it, I guess, you know, maybe a little better paced. The pace can be a little uneven at times, but any scenes with the two of them is just great. I mean, I really enjoy it. I think it's kind of a fun movie. It's very over the top. It's what I like. So.
Excellent. I'd say I've been watching Feud as well. It's good fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun to watch. I mean, it's just, if you just like watching two divas, like, you know, insult each other back and forth, then there you go.
Have you read the book, The Divine Feud?
No, I have not.
That's very good. That's good fun. You know, there's loads of, well, people that, you know, a lot of it's probably made up. And sort of quotes attributed to them were probably they didn't say or they may well have done it. It's kind of, but yeah, it's I can't remember who wrote it, but if you look it up, it's Betty and Joan, The Divine Feud. It's well worth a read. I think that's what this is obviously based on the book.
I always feel like they probably didn't like each other by all accounts, but I feel like the feud was kind of blown up to be bigger than probably what it really was.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if it actually. I hadn't heard that they'd were getting on, and then they kind of manufactured the feud to sort of, you know, pit them against each other. But yeah, no, it's very entertaining TV. So, and of course the film's a classic. So, yeah, excellent. Anything else, Nathan?
No, that's all I've seen recently. I want to go see the Belko Experiment. Mm. I'll see it before our next show.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, me too. I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that looks good. So, excellent. Well, thank you. What about you, Eric? What have you been watching?
Okay, well, I watched Grotesque after your recommendation last week. I went out and bought it in my local shop in the village. So, a couple of things that struck me. Firstly, the guy who plays Linda Blair's dad, Shawing. And secondly, it's completely what you said, Nathan. It's a film, when you put it on, you'll never guess what's going to happen in the final reel. You know, it's not your typical horror film in any way. I mean, it's like five different movies stitched into one, but what's odd is that it doesn't blend them all together. It just moves through them episodically. So it starts off kind of like the punks reminded me of the futuristic warriors in Mad Max 2. So it has that kind of post-apocalyptic feel to start, and apart from Linda Blair's huge shoulder pads, which very much set it in the 80s. And then it becomes a home invasion movie. And then from there, it moves into something like The Unseen or Humongous. Then it decides it wants to be Human Centipede. And then finally, at the end, it turns into The Monster Squad. And I was like going, oh, my God. I don't know what the production history is behind the film, but I imagine there was tons of tinkering going on behind the scenes, because it just doesn't feel cohesive at all. It's hugely entertaining though, And it's one I hadn't been aware. I had never heard of it before until you mentioned it, Justin, a few weeks ago. But really delighted I did, because I just thought it was wonderful. Really good find.
Yeah, excellent. I'm still working on the review, which will be up on Hysteria Lives at some point.
You know, it reminds me, did you ever play that childhood game where you'd write a line of a poem or a line of a story, then you'd fold over the papers and then hand it to another person and they'd write the next line without knowing what had gone previously?
Yeah.
That's kind of what the script feels like. It feels like somebody was playing that game. Because it just moves from one sort of type of movie to another. It's just very odd. The other thing I watched, I'm just touching this briefly just because it has, I don't know, it just might have relevance to us. I bought the Scream Factory reissues of Poltergeist 2 and 3. They came out a couple of months ago. And I was listening to the audio commentaries on it by a guy called David Fertney, he runs the website poltergeist3.com, which, despite what the title of the URL of the website is, it's actually for Poltergeist 2 and 3 specifically, looking behind the scenes. And he's a bit of an expert. But he says on the website that some of his commentary was edited out because it had to go through the legal department of MGM and they cut out certain lines of his commentary. And I just wondering, like, I don't know, I don't listen back to our commentary tracks because I just don't listen to myself. I can't do it. But have we ever been edited for legal reasons, I wonder?
I don't know. Well, we haven't been sued yet, so I imagine... Yeah.
But he said the things that were cut out were things where he said Heather O'Rourke didn't like working on Poltergeist 2 because she said the set felt very disorganized. So they cut that out. He also mentions what Heather O'Rourke's salary was, which maybe might be confidential. I'm not sure. They cut that bit out. And he also says where the location of the underground car park in Poltergeist 3 was, and they removed that reference. It's fairly innocuous stuff they were taking out. So, yeah.
How strange. Well, I suppose that's MGM, isn't it? I don't know. I don't think Arrow or 88 Films would be that precious. I wouldn't have thought.
No.
But actually, talking of Arrow and 88 Films, it was announced just a few days ago that we're doing our next commentary for Arrow will be for the 1981 slasher Madhouse, which will be interesting. So looking forward to covering that. It's not one we've done on the podcast yet. So
you did a commentary last weekend that I don't know if we're allowed to announce, are we? You did it with somebody else.
Yeah, no, it's fine to announce. I've done. A commentary for the new Blu-ray release of Just Before Dawn with friend Callum Waddle for 88 Films. So that's going to be coming out at some point. I'm not sure exactly when, but that'll be coming out soon.
Well, Code Red already put out the best edition of that film. So.
I love Code Red. They're brilliant.
Yeah. Won't have a bad word said against them. Or
no.
I'm just surprised, actually, that Code Red allowed Just Before Dawn to even escape the United States. But there you go. Miracles do happen. So, anyway, anything else, Eric?
No, that was it, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Just a couple of things I've seen. This film, I've seen, I like to think I've seen pretty much all early 80s horror movies, but one that had escaped me until this time, or I don't remember seeing it, was The Entity. With Barbara Hershey, which was the kind of the sexy poltergeist movie, not sexy. I mean, it's kind of rapey.
It's
not really sexy.
It's not that sexy.
No, it's not sexy. That's probably the wrong term, but more rapey.
It probably is sexy to PJ Sol's husband in Innocent Prey.
Well,
he'd probably find it sexy.
It probably would, yes. But I remember it coming out back in 82 or whenever it was out, and it was being a bit of a big deal. But it was kind of very similar to Poltergeist, actually, to funny talking about that with the whole setup with the paranormal investigators coming trying to find out what's going on. But yeah, Barbara Hershey's character just randomly seems to be attacked by kind of a poltergeist who kind of rapes her. And obviously you never see this until it turns into a giant ice cube at the end. You never actually see the poltergeist. I quite enjoyed it for what it was. It's kind of had that real kind of early 80s feel. I think it was shot in 1981 and it had that feel of like a Halloween 2 or something. It very much that kind of suburban feel going on in it. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, not for a while, but I did see it, yeah. It used to be on the telly quite a lot back in the day.
Mm. What movie is this? You cut out my...
The Entity.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's kind of... I was wondering how they got away with it on TV, because the scene where Barbara Hershey, when her boyfriend or walks in and she's buck naked, full, you know, tit and minge, And the kind of, you know, you can see that, you can see everything, and her, you know, like her breasts are being massaged by this kind of invisible force. So I'm kind of wondering how that would have played on TV, or if they.
Well, it was on a sort of cable film channel we used to get for free.
Oh right, one of those
back in the late 80s.
Okay,
legally we used to get it for free.
Okay, Eric, your kind of your illegal piracy knows no ends.
We got it was legal. It was a film channel called Premiere that came out in the late 80s, and they used to show the same sort of, I think I've mentioned it before, they used to show the same sort of dozen movies over and over again, and right. The Entity was one of them.
Okay,
but they may have cut out the tit and minge bit because I don't remember tits and minge in it. But
right. But yeah, so I mean that yeah.
Stop making me say tits and minge.
I wish you would, Eric. But yeah, so that was interesting to catch up with that. Another film I saw, a newer film, which was The Neon Demon.
Oh, I liked that.
Did you like it? Yeah, mm-hmm. I quite liked it. I kind of knew I was off. I had a bug that was going around the office this week, so I was off work while I was kind of working doing emails. I was watching it at the same time. And I knew that it wasn't a film that Stuart would watch because he hates like long, boring films. And I looked at it, it's 2 hours long, and when I looked at the reviews, it was kind of like basically an art house film. I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of quite interesting, but it's difficult to make a film about the vapid nature of LA and without making a boring film. But I thought it's very stylish.
That's what it is. It's all the style, really, because it looks amazing, but there isn't much going on plot wise.
No. So, but yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was, interesting in its banality. Have you guys, Joseph and Nathan, you seen Neon Demon?
No. I have.
You have, Joseph?
Yes, and I hated it with a passion.
Okay.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
You're such a hater.
I thought it was kind of 2001-ish in that it was very slow and... almost hypnotic, I suppose.
I just thought it was very, very pretentious and dull. It looked great, I'll give it that, but other than that, I just did nothing for me.
Okay.
Would you say it was better than Axon, though, in the dullness stakes?
Well, I don't know. But see, you're getting into a rather strange territory there, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we all know how great Axon was.
Yes. Well. Oh,
that's the film that nearly broke the podcast, as it all already known.
Yeah.
Actually, talking of, have you seen all the rumours about the new Suspiria film? About
no.
I saw a photograph of Jessica Harper today on the set.
Oh, I saw that too.
Yeah, she's doing a cameo in it. But the guy who's making it, he's like an Italian filmmaker, which is great. But he did Bigger Splash with Tilda Swinton and can't remember his name, but which was kind of a remake of the swim La Piscine or the Piscine, which a French film from 1969 with Alain Delon and Romy Schneider, and which was kind of interesting, but it was quite boring. It was the same kind of thing like Neon Demon. It was kind of just basically quite a kind of drawn out, boring film, but quite beautiful to watch. But he said, the director said that he's not using any kind of bright colours in it. It's all going to be very dark. And, so he's going for that dark and evil, he put it. So I'd be interested to watch it. But his films, all the films he's made have been quite, Suspiria is quite high octane. And I'm not quite sure, if he's what this is going to be like. It'd be interesting to see. I just hope he doesn't turn it into a completely boring art house movie. But yeah. So anyway, that's one to look forward to at some point.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not. No. I did see the other thing. A shout out to the director of Party Night, and I can't remember his name, and apologies, but he messaged
Troy Escamilla.
That's it, Troy. Yes. He messaged us on our Facebook page, and he said he'd been a fan of the podcast and Hysteria Libs. So we're very excited to see the film. Troy, and if you are listening, if you want to send us a screener or an online link so we can watch it, and then we can have a chat about it on here, which would be great. But
I like the I've just googled it. I like the poster.
Yeah,
yeah.
I want to look up the poster.
He's got a new movie coming out called Stirring. It's a Christmas slasher. I think he just raised all of his funds on Kickstarter, so I'm really looking forward to that. I like the poster for that one as well.
Excellent. And talking of Kickstarter,
and Stirring has Brink Stevens in it as well. So.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, excellent. And yeah. But talking of Kickstarter, Nathan and Joseph, do you want to mention your crowdfunding, what you're crowdfunding for at the moment?
Sure. We're just doing like a, I guess you could call it a Tales from the Crypt episode. It's just going to be a 30-minute long little horror film that Nathan wrote and I'm doing the screenplay for. It's basically about a couple, a young, newly married couple who are on their way to a rock concert and their subsequent honeymoon, and their car breaks down on a dirt road, and they're, I guess you could say, menaced by a sinister scarecrow. It's called Till Dusk Do Us Part. We're really looking forward to that. We're doing auditions in April. It was April 2nd, Nathan, I believe. I think so. Yeah. Anyway, we've raised half the budget. We've only got like $600 left to raise. So if you have a couple of pennies laying around, you send it our way. We'll do our best to make a scary little short film. And what we've written is actually pretty scary, as opposed to technically scary of what we've done before.
I also like the artwork for Party Night. It looks very much like, an 80s artwork. Mm.
And I'm just looking at his one Stirring, which is coming out. It's got Helene Udy from My Bloody Valentine's in there as well.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. So.
Excellent. Well, maybe you can have Troy come on the show at some point and have a chat with us. That would be great. So all good. Excellent. Well, shall we move into the quiz? I think let's see who's going to be crowned slasher trivia king or queen.
Spoiler alert, it's going to be me.
We shall see. Maybe it'll be Nathan. Maybe it'll be a shock.
Yeah, but I don't think I would make me king. I'd probably make me tie with the three of you.
Then we'll have to do another quiz.
A tiebreaker.
Okay, well, this quiz is my swan song. I won't be doing any more quizzes. Nathan probably will, but when I was putting this quiz together, I had no intention of making it my last one, but it's getting harder and harder to kind of concoct these things. So,
yeah, just like jokes of the week.
Yeah. So there you go. This is going to be my final one. So basically it's a general slasher movie stuff. Four rounds and one final bonus round. You know the drill. Round one is 1981 and below, so anything on 1981 and before. And Justin, we had a Facebook thing poll to basically we asked the listeners who they thought would win, and whoever had the most votes at the very end of the game, if that person wins the quiz, they can take away the points from someone else. So Justin, you're the favorite to win, so you'll go first.
Even if I lose, I can take what?
No. It's only if you win the quiz.
What's the point of him taking away the points then? If he's
just
already
as a final,
won?
Just as a final,
just as add insult to injury.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But it's not going to come to that. Favorite to win. So, Justin, yes. Door number one, two, or three?
Number two, please.
Okay, this is a quote from a slasher movie, and the quote is: "When you came to me in the woods, I thought, wow, here's a man with some imagination. Later, I realized you were just a silly jerk who gets all his ideas from girly magazines." Can you name that movie?
No idea. Doesn't ring any bells, so I'm just going to have to take a wild stab in the dark and say it's 1981 or before, isn't it?
Yeah, it's anything on or before 1981.
I don't know, Class Reunion Massacre?
Sorry, I'm going to pass.
Ooh, I love that movie.
I thought you knew the answer.
Oh, no, I love the movie.
Okay, I'm going to pass this to Nathan.
I'm going to guess The Burning, just because of Glazer's, like, magazines and lubricated rubbers needs.
No, I'm sorry. Eric?
Oh.
Savage Weekend.
That is correct.
Yes.
Oh, that was my other guess. But see, I'm going to be very magnanimous and let Eric win because I think he deserves it. He needs bigging up.
I love that even if Eric wins, Justin's going to try to take the wind out of his sails.
I know. He's not going to, though.
It's very Joan Crawford.
I'm expecting. I expect you to organize an open top bus triumph parade for me.
Bless you.
Through
Eric.
The streets of Bristol.
Hey, Nathan, door number what? One or door number one or door number three?
I'm going to go with one, please.
Okay. According to this tagline, this year, what movie will be a scream?
Will be a scream? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Scream.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to pass this to...
Well, it would have made more sense.
I'm going to pass this to Eric.
Silent Scream?
No, I'm sorry. Justin?
So, can you say it again? So, this movie will be this year...
It says, according to this tagline, this year, what movie will be a scream?
This year, what movie will be a scream? Halloween?
No, I'm sorry. The answer is Prom Night. This year, Prom Night will be a scream.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I don't remember that tagline for Prom
Neither
Night.
Neither do I.
No. Yeah. You're outdoing yourself this time, Joseph, on your obscure trivia.
Yes.
Have we got the color of somebody's eyes in?
Yes.
Chase the Massacre.
What color were the killer's eyes in Prom Night?
I think they were aquamarine. Anyway. Eric, last one for you.
Yep.
I'm looking at two posters for two slasher films.
What are they?
Now listen to the question. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at two posters for two slasher films that feature a killer named Michael Myers, and one of them is not Halloween. What two movies am I talking about?
Is the other one So I Married an Ex-Murderer?
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to pass this to Justin.
So one of them is Halloween, but one of them isn't Halloween. So Michael Myers...
No, it says, I'm looking at two posters for two slasher films that feature a killer named Michael Myers, and one of them is not Halloween.
Oh, I know the answer now.
What am I talking about?
Oh.
Justin?
I'm thinking. I'm trying to think.
Okay.
It's not Halloween. I don't know. Halloween 2?
It's two posters. Two movies.
Yeah, Halloween 2 is a separate movie.
Yeah,
What two posters am I looking at?
Oh, Halloween and Halloween 2.
That is correct.
Okay.
It's a trick question.
Yes, I know. I got that after I...
All right, so round one is over. Eric and Justin are tied. Nathan, dead last at zero.
Well, that's because our fans had no faith in me and it killed my confidence.
Yeah.
So how dare you all, except for one. One of you are
One of you is not going to get a bunch of rhubarb in your face.
Yes.
All right. Round two is How Did They Die? This is for movies from 1982 to 1984.
Good.
And Nathan, we'll start with you. Door number one, two, or three?
I will go with two this time.
All right. John in Sleepaway Camp from 1983.
John. Which one was John? Let's see. Is he the one that gets stung to death by the bees?
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Eric.
I don't know which one John is, so I'm going to guess is he the father who gets killed by the speedboat at the start?
That is correct.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. Let's see. Eric.
Yes.
Door number one or door number three?
I'll have a number one, please.
Okay. Paul, Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Paulie. Which one is Paul? Oh, does he get the, that thingy to the crotch, whatever it's called, a spear gun to the crotch as he's trying to swim out?
That is correct.
Yes.
Well, Eric's Justin. On fire.
What?
Well, I say you're on fire. I said that's a good
thing. I thought you said I'm a liar.
No. Oh, Eric, you're like you're like the Donald Trump of the podcast.
Who dare you?
I imagine you're tweeting furiously all the way through this.
It's going to cut your Meals on Wheels funding if you're not careful. Justin, you're left with door number three.
Okay.
So how did they die? Charlie in Silent Rage.
Charlie in Silent Rage. Does he get? I'm trying to remember back to Silent Rage. Does he get? I can't remember. All I can remember is the opening. Does he get axed to death?
No, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. Nathan.
Oh, like I'm gonna remember anything from that garbage. Silent Rage. I don't know. The killer like uses his bare hands on him.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. Eric.
Is it the one that's hugged and his back is broken or something?
That is correct.
Yeah. Wait, what the fuck? I just said he uses his bare hands on him.
Yeah, we didn't
say
him.
Arms. That's his arms. He uses his arms. No,
yeah, rhubarb.
Oh my god, I hate your quizzes.
Go back to the rhubarb patch, Nathan.
Ugh.
Why don't you go tell that to the rhubarb? Maybe it'll listen to you.
I'm going to shove a rhubarb down your throat.
You talk better than you shove.
Because my lawnmower is still my bitch by a fucking pig.
Nathan, okay. Nathan, do you think there might be a fix going on here?
What?
Absolutely.
How dare
there's
you?
A fix.
I think Russia's behind this.
Who? Mm-hmm.
Kremlin.
Oh. Oh, Russia. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I think he said Rush. I was like, who's he?
Going into round three, Eric has four, Justin has one, Nathan has zero.
Woohoo!
And round three is AKA, and this is for movies from 1986 to 1989. And we will start with Eric this time.
Well, I'm going to need a big number two, I think.
Big number two, okay. And you have to figure out what movie I'm talking about. This is Das Haus der Verfluchten.
Das Haus der Verfluchten. Something about a house.
That's der Verfluchten.
A house that's wet. Sorority House Massacre.
No, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. Justin.
Haus der Verfluchten. So it's the house of... I don't know German. I don't know what Fluchten is, but House of so it's not House of Evil because that was earlier. So what's this? 1980,
86,
86 through 89. I'm sorry, 85 through 89. I'm sorry.
It's not Slaughter High, is it?
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect, Nathan.
I have no idea. Ghost House.
No, I'm sorry. The answer is Formula for a Murder.
Oh, I've never seen that movie.
I have. I reviewed it for Hysteria Lives.
You did. You should have known that answer.
Then you should have known that.
Exactly.
Okay, Justin, door number one or door number three?
Number one, please.
Okay. Shiro no wana.
Pardon? Say it. What the fuck is that? Say it again.
Shiro no wana.
Shiro no one. Wow. Is that some a Japanese tagline for some film?
Yes, it's an AKA.
Fuck. What?
It's not a tagline. It's a tagline.
It's an AKA. How the fuck was... So that could be basically anything, couldn't it?
It could be anything. Yes.
Anything.
Because even if you knew Japanese, he's probably not pronouncing it properly. So.
No. Is it Battleship Potemkin?
That
now you're
correct.
Just being stupid.
No, all right, I'm just going to take a wild stab because if it's... I'm going to say Slaughter High again.
I am sorry, that is incorrect. Nathan, do you know it?
Well, I'm going to pick the only, like, Asian movie I could remember that Justin reviewed on his site was that Deadly Camp movie.
I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Eric.
That's all I had.
I'm just going to guess Body Count.
No, I'm sorry. The answer is Evil Dead Trap.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So I thought, I guess I didn't realize if I'd realized you were going down that route of actually, rather than just an AK of an American, a Japanese titling of an American movie.
That's what I just thought as well.
Okay, Nathan, you have door number three. So yours is The Horror Party.
The Horror Party.
Well, it's spelled die, but I believe they pronounce it D.
I'm going to say Killer Party.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Eric?
Well, it should have been.
And The Last Slumber Party?
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Justin?
Should have been that one, too.
So D Killer Party, no, D Horror Party.
Yes.
Slaughter, go on, say Slaughter High.
Slaughter High.
That's your guess.
That's my guess.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. The answer is April Fool's Day. Okay. So, going into round four now. Eric at four, Justin at one, Nathan at zero. And this is anagrams.
Oh, Nathan's going to stay at zero this round.
So, Eric, you'll go first. Door number one, door number two, door number three, and you'll have...
I think I went first last time, did I not?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It'd be Justin. You'll go first.
Okay. Well, I'll take number two.
Okay. I'm going to read out these letters, and you have to figure out what movie it is, and you have 30 seconds after the last letter, after I say go.
It's like countdown.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, ready?
Yep.
R-G-T-K-P-H-E-O-E-S-E, and go.
I can't. I'm rubbish at anagrams. Do we know what year this is from, or what?
Oh, it's 80 through 89.
Right. Okay. It could be the something. The. I'm kind of, a lot. 30 seconds of me stumbling around is going to be pretty useless. So I'm just going to give up. Yeah.
I'm going to pass this then to Nathan.
Okay. Well, I don't have a good one. So I'm going to say The Spear Gawk, because that's all I can come up with.
I love The Spear Gawk.
Did you like that movie?
Yeah, I love it.
Eric, do you know it?
Well, it's obviously The Sepper Grook. Yeah, The Sepper Grook.
It's Gawk. That's the sequel to The Spear Gawk.
Okay.
Yeah.
No one Sepper Grook knows that.
No. Sepper Grook.
The actual answer is Ghost Keeper.
Oh.
I think we were all focused on the.
Yeah, Justin threw me off when he said the, so it's his fault.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do Nathan, door number one or door number three?
I want to go with three this time.
Okay, are you ready?
No, but let's do it.
Okay. LTDNISSEMANES.
Goodness.
Was that two F's for Freddy and fuck in the middle?
No, it's S as in Sam.
No, but in the middle you had LTDNIFF?
SS as in
SS.
Sam.
SS, okay, sorry.
Oh, Lord, okay, well, I don't want to, like, take too much time, so... Okay, I'm going to say name sis in dittal. Because that's all I've got.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Eric?
Is it The Maltiest Dust?
No. Justin?
Is it Littered Knit in the Mains?
What does she do to the mains?
That's it. The answer is Silent Madness.
Oh, yes. I think we're great at anagrams.
Yeah, I think we're taking away from this is anagrams aren't our strong point.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, you're left with door number one.
Maltius Dust is a good movie, though. I recommend it.
Yes. All right, here we go, Eric.
Yeah.
LDBOFEOSIRTS. Go.
Ooh. Okay, I can spot one word in there that I reckon. Oh, Blood Sisters.
That is correct.
Yes.
I would never have gotten that one either.
All right, this is it. The last round.
Is it even needed?
Yeah. It's a bonus round. Mm-hmm. Not really, but you know. It's a final bonus question. And you get 2 points if you get this question right. So I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 100. No. This is to determine who answers first. I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 100. The person to get closest without going over will answer first. So, Justin is our favorite to win. What number do you think I'm thinking of?
Well, look at. I bet people are glad they backed me. 69.
Okay. Nathan, what number do you think I'm thinking of?
I feel like you're going to go with something familiar, like maybe your IQ. So
well, it's off the charts. Six. I can do that.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with 31.
Okay, and Eric?
I'm going to go with my age, 27.
Okay. Eric, you were actually the closest without
going. Woo!
The number was 63.
Hang on. Oh, without going over?
Yes.
No, Nathan was closer.
He said, was the closest.
No, you said six.
No, I said three.
No, I said six because he said, I'm going to think of what your IQ. You're probably thinking about your IQ.
Okay. So, Nathan said 31. So, Nathan, you go first then. All right.
Maybe I can get a point here.
All right. Here's the question. Justin originally gave 1.5 stars in his written review for this 80s slasher, and we covered it on episode 63.
1.5. I originally wanted to say Splatter U, but I feel like he would have given that a lower rating. How dare you, Justin? So, 1.5, and it's episode 63.
Stop Googling.
I'm not Googling. I don't know. I'm going to have to stick with Splatter U because I can't think of anything else that he would have given that bad of a rating. Wait a minute. No, I'm going to stick with Splatter U.
I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Eric.
Oh, I'm just going to guess Hide and Go Shriek.
That is correct.
Is it?
Yes.
I was about to say, did we even cover that?
Justin, why did you give that such a bad review?
Yeah, what? Justin.
Well, I've kind of grown to appreciate it a bit more. It's like many of them, and they're the reviews I gave many years ago. So, I watched it again recently. I enjoyed it more.
What year did that come out?
87.
87,
88. Mm-hmm. Oh, what year did the review come out? I can't remember. It must have been over 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, it is, 1.5.
So just so I've got this clear, Joseph, can I now take away all Eric's points?
What? No, I won.
You did not win, so...
Yeah. No, but I thought there was a kind of in
Justin, if you want, you could take away all my points.
We haven't got any. No, but in subclause 2, paragraph 4...
No, there's
4,
no subclauses at
there
all.
There was, it said
just
that...
Just deal with losing, you big girl.
I'm going to miss this. Well, maybe on my next quiz I'll make it even worse.
Yeah, your new quiz.
Oh, wait, that's right. That's right. Yeah, the new beginning quiz. There we go. Ooh, that's a good idea. All about a new beginning. Yeah.
Anyway, congratulations, Eric.
6-1-0.
So. Woohoo! So when do you want to do that open top bus parade, Justin? You're organising it, so just let me know when it's organised.
How does sort of next decade sound to you?
Well, it's only 3 years away. I can wait if you want. It has to be extra special, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll find a milk float that we can drive around the back of the council estate for you.
Congratulations, Eric.
Thank you.
You have won a perm like PJ Souls and Innocent.
Oh, dream come true.
Well, talking
the parting gifts for our two losers is $1 million each, right, Justin?
Hey!
Yes.
I want that. If anyone deserves that perm, it's Justin.
It's me.
Yeah.
Why would I deserve that perm?
Because you're bold.
Because I'm bold.
Because you're bold, and you should be made to go around with that stupid perm and everyone laugh at you.
I feel like this movie would have served better called Innocent Perm.
Yes.
Well, we're talking of which, let's play. There isn't, to give you some kind of indication of how well known this film or isn't, it doesn't have a trailer that I could find. So here is some dialogue from the film.
Hello?
Hello, Kathy. Kathy, this is Sheriff Baker.
Oh, hey. Hi, Sheriff. Listen, if it's about the house...
Never mind about the house. I won't tell you about your husband.
Now, he just busted loose out of the state asylum.
Escaped? How?
Well, never mind how. What I want you to do is to get in your car and come down here as quick as you can.
I'm sending some officers over to your house just in case he shows up.
In case? Well, of course he'll show up.
Kathy, listen to what I'm saying. Just come down here as soon as you can, my...
Sheriff? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Though appearing to be a loving couple, Kathy is suspicious of Joe's need to work late every night. Discovering Joe's car parked outside a motel, Kathy watches in horror as Joe slashes a prostitute to death with a razor. Seeking help from her friend, Sheriff Baker, Joe is sent to the state hospital for the criminally insane, and Kathy attempts to rebuild her life in Australia. Soon after her arrival, Kathy becomes the object of obsession for her landlord, Philip, who observes Kathy's every movement through closed-circuit TV cameras hidden in her apartment. When Philip discovers that Kathy has fallen in love with Rick, he feels betrayed and plans an untimely and gruesome ending for both of them. In the interim, Joe has escaped and is also planning Kathy's brutal death. So, Innocent Prey is an obscure little number. We'll talk a little bit more about why it was so obscure. But, it features PJ Souls, which... as most of you listening, or I imagine everyone listening, would remember from Halloween. So here she gets a chance to be the final girl, for want of a better term. She's saddled with an incredibly bizarre perm all the way through. And in my review, I remember I quipped saying her hair was so big, it was kind of, when she got the phone call from the sheriff, it was like he was saying the killer's inside your hair, or the phone call's coming from inside your hair. I mean, it is really that big. It's that 80s kind of perm, which I'm sure we'll talk about more in a sec. But she gets to be the kind of like the final girl, not once, not twice, but almost three times in this movie. It's a kind of strange mishmash between slasher and soap opera and romance and sort of predating some of the kind of later surveillance kind of thrillers of the 90s that was it Silver, or was it was Silver, wasn't it, the one with
Sliver.
So it's kind of, and I wonder if that was inspired by this film. I enjoy it. I mean, PJ Souls is always good to watch. She's very likable, and even though the film is ridiculous, and that's obviously part of its charm. So you've got this woman whose husband turns out to be criminally insane and kills prostitutes. She arranges for him. Well, she basically, in like a honey trap, gets him caught, and then he goes to a hospital of criminally insane and escapes and comes after her in quite a tense scene, actually. So it's very much aping kind of the slasher movies, unsurprisingly, when actually you sort of see who was behind it. And in fact, actually, it's an Australian film as part of the Ausploitation kind of movement of the 80s in Australia. I enjoyed it, and I thought it'd make a fun one to talk on the podcast. So that's kind of why I chose it. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts before I talk a little bit more about it. So Nathan, what did you think of Innocent Prey?
I really enjoy Innocent Prey, aka Every Man Wants to Murder PJ Souls. Because even the ending, I mean, it's like she can't catch a break. You know, she's just having like really awful luck with men. But no, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I was thinking that, you know, one of the worst scenes in that movie to me is when they show the close up of the razor blade, you know, going across the finger. I mean, that just, so painful to watch to me. I mean, like, all the deaths in this movie, and that's, like, the painful scene to me is a little razor blade slicing the finger. But I think that, you know, I love, you know, that PJ Souls, like, the night before, she will go through, like, you know, seeing, like, a decapitated head and, like, he, you know, her husband trying to murder her and stuff. And the very next day, she's like, I just can't wait to get out of town, you know. Oh, I just want him behind bars. I mean, it's very much like he just annoyed her the night before, you know, instead of trying to murder her. I love her cowboy hats that she wears, too. I think that the way it sits on her perm, you know, I thought it, you know, it fit very nicely. Let's see. I think that it takes a little bit to get going, I guess, you know, like in the beginning. But, you know, it was fun to see Debbie Sue Voorhees, you know, playing the, you know, the first victim.
She got big wobbly titties.
That she does. And, you know, it was, and I think Justin even quoted this in his review where she, you know, and it was in the opening montage too that we played, but, you know, that, my God, Joe, you cut her to pieces. I love the dialogue in this movie. You know, I mean, it's a fun movie, and if anybody wants to see PJ Souls, like, be the final girl, because, you know, she's the victim in a lot of movies, then I would definitely recommend checking it out, because it's, you know, fun to see her play the final girl. There's, like, that great scene where he, you know, attacks her through the door. And, you know, I just kept thinking, you know, if you didn't have that big perm, he wouldn't have been able to grab your hair. Uh-huh. It's just, you know.
If she'd been Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah. I know. He wouldn't have got a hold of her.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, recommended. You know, it's a really fun movie. So, very highly recommended from me.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Nathan. How about you, Joseph?
Okay, well, I was, I watched this really late last night. Really last minute, and I was doing some research, and I stumbled across its Wikipedia page, and I really loved the plot outline they had on the Wikipedia page. It says, Kathy walks into a motel room and witnesses the murder of a young prostitute by a serial killer. She flees the country, and that's it.
Very in-depth, isn't it?
Yeah, very in-depth. I'll go one over on Nathan and say I absolutely adore this film. I loved it. I loved it to death. I had so much fun with it. I just think it's so ridiculous and so preposterous, but it's just so much fun. All the characters, even the Looney Tunes characters, are just likable and fun to watch. Of course, PJ Souls' hair is a crime against humanity. I think we've already discussed that. I did pick up a lot of the Psycho references, like, you know, on the soundtrack, you know, especially during the driving scenes. And then there's the scene where after he kills the prostitute, the blood going down the shower drain. And, of course, we mentioned Debbie Sue Voorhees playing the prostitute. I wish I lived in that world. I'd probably be arrested for solicitation. I did like the attack through the window where he grabs her hair. I thought that was actually a really good scene. A couple of funny bits I had noticed is that I love the scene where she discovers the decapitated head. And he shows back up, and she sprays him with Windex to get away. I thought that was hilarious.
Never underestimate the power of Windex.
You know, and he, like, can kill people so easily, but Windex, no, that's the stopping point there.
And I love how Nathan said, you know, after two attacks and she decides to leave the country, she's, you know, she's all bubbly about it. She said, well, I can't wait to get out of town.
It's like, oh, I'll take a nice vacation.
And these police officers are so ineffective at catching this guy. I mean, he's attacked her like two times, killed a prostitute, and he keeps coming back, and yet they can't seem to get a grasp on him. I also laughed at, I like the fact that, you know, he, when he escapes from prison, he grabs a hold of the barbed wire to climb over the fence. And later in the movie, he smashes through the glass to grab at her. But then when he gets to Australia to track her down, he kind of cautiously taps the window with like a little piece of metal, like it's, oh, the glass is going to break. Like, you just had your hands through all kinds of, you know, trauma, and yet when you go to attack her again, you tap it kind of cautiously. I laughed at that. One thing I can say about PJ's hair is that at the end, towards the end, it actually transforms into kind of a mullet. the perm kind of dies down a little bit, and she becomes kind of she has kind of like a lion's mane going on there. But no, I mean, I really like this. I think it's a lot of fun. The only thing that kind of bugged me was the husband character when he gets to Australia. I mean, I think it's kind of insinuated that Philip kills him somehow with, I guess, his house is booby-trapped to be electrified, or he may kill him in some other way. But I thought that was kind of anticlimactic, how she just kind of finds him dead. Mm. I mean, they go through all that, and then she just finds him dead, and that's it. But, no, I do like the implication that, you know, every guy she's going to run into is pretty much just going to screw her over and try to kill her. And on that note, I actually really loved that ending shot with her going home from the hospital. And he's like, she's like, I can't wait to get you home all alone to myself. He's like, neither can I. And there's that straight razor. I was like, oh, that was just so funny. Just a perfect capper to everything that, you know, happened. She has such bad luck. You know, I'm actually shocked that the plane she was on carrying her to Australia didn't crash. But no, thumbs way up for me. I loved Innocent Prey.
I was surprised.
You know, she needs to be a strong, independent woman who don't need no man.
Yeah,
that's what she needs.
I'll tell you what, it reminded me a little bit that, you know, that scene in Aeroplane where that woman starts getting panic stricken, and they kind of and they're queuing up to slap her, and they kind of like, there's a queue of people to sort of like, and they come with baseball bats and stuff, and it can remind me of in this film of PJ Souls, who just every man she meets, I'm just half expecting the sheriff to turn up at the end with a pickaxe or something to sort of go after her, but. But Eric, what did you think of Innocent Prey?
Well, I love it, and I loved it from the start because PJ Souls' hair is just so astonishingly large, even by 1980s standards. It's absolutely gigantic, and as Nathan was saying, like when the scenes later in the movie where she puts a Stetson on, like her hair is so big she can't actually put the Stetson on her head; it just sort of has to balance on top of her huge perm. So you know, a gust of wind will knock it off or something, and you know, it makes her look about 17 feet tall with the huge hair, and then with a Stetson balancing on top of the huge hair as well. Again, this is a film probably not as bad as Grotesque, but it sort of surfs between different genres. It starts out like Dallas with this sort of oil deal gone wrong, which I always assumed was sort of what pushes her husband over the edge and makes him go out and kill Debbie Sue Voorhees with her big wabby titties. And when PJ Souls' character then, when that part is over, it kind of sort of reminded me a bit of the setup to When a Stranger Calls, because it sort of shifts gear then, and PJ Souls disappears to Australia. And as Joseph was pointing out, her hair kind of tempers a bit, and it's a bit sad to see her like going for a more sort of a less hysterically stupid hairstyle. Which saddened me a bit, but still, it was made up for with other peculiar moments later in the film. I'm a big fan of the director Colin Eggleston's movie Long Weekend. He made, this is 83, this was shot, so it was about 5 years before he made Long Weekend, which is a nature takes revenge movie, but done in a very subtle way, kind of done in the style of Picnic at Hanging Rock. This is not exactly done in a subtle style. This is a very trashy movie. So he's obviously changed his filmmaking style in the intervening years. It reminded me a bit, and you'll probably like this reference, Nathan, it reminded me a bit of Terror at Ten Killer as well. The fact that you have the two girls escaping their men problems and going on a vacation together, kind of. It had that kind of setup. So the only real difference between the two films is sort of the good acting, the decent plot, the big hair, you know, a bit of a storyline and a bit of momentum. But otherwise, they're identical. Would you agree? Yeah,
identical, except for all of that.
Yeah. As you're saying, PJ Souls' Kathy is one of the unluckiest heroines ever in a slasher movie. She finds herself tangled up with, you know, not one but two and possibly three, it's implied, psychos, and unrelated ones at that. I mean, she just jumps from the frying pan into the fire constantly. It reminded me of Sandra Bullock in Gravity, who, if you've seen that film, she basically is hopping from space station to space station, the satellite in outer space, trying to stay alive. But every time she gets to a new refuge, something goes wrong and the space station blows up and she has to jump to another one. And then when she lands on Earth, she lands in a, this is a spoiler alert probably, she lands in a lake, and you're sort of half expecting sort of some kind of, you know, shark or something to come along and attack her. It's just because she's having the unluckiest day, and poor PJ Souls has the same type of luck going on in her life. And it's this kind of daft narrative that I love about this film, Innocent Prey. If it had been more straightforward, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it as much, because it has kind of a TV movie look, apart from the copious amounts of nudity and thrusting buttocks. I love the finale is bizarre, where the second psycho displays his electrical engineering skills. It's a very unusual method to go about, imprisoning somebody. Surely if he could just point a gun at her or something, it'd be less hassle. So I'm delighted that we chose Innocent Prey, because we've done a string of films that haven't really moved me that much. We had Jason Goes to Hell, which I didn't like, Axum, which I really didn't like. And we had Night Warning, which I did quite like, but it's not a film I can rewatch, whereas Innocent Prey is one I could rewatch quite a lot, because it's just hilarious. It's equal parts. It's fun. It's silly. It's hilarious at times. I don't mean to laugh at it, but sometimes it is, laugh out loud funny. It's a popcorn thriller of the trashiest kind. I really, really enjoy it. Yeah.
I would go off that and say it definitely has that rewatchability factor for me, because it's not a very long movie, and there's something is always going on. But one thing I wanted to point out was that despite how kooky this film is, I thought the scene where she witnesses Debbie Sue Voorhees getting killed was quite suspenseful. I love the way the camera focuses on her eyes in that frame, and then it'll cut back between her eyes and Debbie Sue Voorhees kind of just tumbling to the ground after getting sliced up with that a straight razor. It's a really well shot scene. It's really suspenseful. Despite how silly the rest of the film is.
Yeah, but as Nathan was saying, one of the things that stuck out for me as well was how bright and breezy PJ Souls' character is, in the wake of all these horrible events that are happening to her, which is good.
Because cut someone's head off last night. Well, I'm going to Australia.
I'm going to Australia to hang out with my mates. But I prefer that. I don't want to see a realistic portrayal of her being sort of morbid and horror and miserable all through the film. I don't want her to be a goth.
Yeah, I think the upbeatness, kind of in spite of the subject matter, is kind of what gives the film its charm.
Yes, definitely.
Excellent,
Justin.
Thank you. A couple of other little bits that kind of made me chuckle was because Philip is the. It's a landlord of the house where Gwen, her friend, lives in Australia, and she, and he's very eccentric, but he seems to be quite harmless to start off with. But obviously, he's also watching everything that's going on, as we spoke about. He's got all these kind of TV screens. He's watching what's going on in her bedroom, and also listening in with her, basically sort of taking the piss out of him a little bit with her boyfriend. But I love to show how unsubtle the film is when he murders, although we don't know at that point, but it's fairly obvious that he's murdered Gwen. PJ's character asks him where, if he's seen her, and he's carrying a shovel over his shoulder, which he's just clearly just buried her with. And it's just like those kind of he's got those kind of things. There's nothing subtle about it. But of course, the director, he also co-wrote Nightmares, the Australian theatre slasher, which we have covered. Have we covered that on the podcast? I think we have, haven't we?
I don't think we have. Have we?
No, we have not.
Oh, we have.
Now you're having a blood and black lace moment.
Yes.
Now,
okay. Well, I reviewed it anyway. I mean, but that's a kind of, that would be a fun one to do. That's because again, it has that very Australian feel, which is, it seems to be this kind of thing, which is, I've got no problem with it. But Australian, and I remember in that film, there's loads of buttocks, isn't there? Sort of thrusting and people being cut on the buttock on the backside with shards of glass. And in this one, you've got a very gratuitous nude scene with the husband sort of grinding away at Debbie Sue Voorhees in a bathtub of like what seems like 10 minutes of his buttocks going up and down in and out, which is kind of
it's hardly 10 minutes.
No, it's not, but it does feel like it. But it's very Australian. There's something about that kind of, you wouldn't see that in an American slasher, would you, from this time? That kind of, that equal opportunities nudity, which is great, don't get me wrong, but it just seems to be, it's an Australian.
Nudity is degrading to both men and women, and I won't stand for it.
Is that right? Is that what you keep on going about Debbie Sue Voorhees?
This is from the guy who's flashed us on,
exactly.
The camera.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. That was obviously somebody hacked into my Skype account.
Yeah, we'll put the clips up later and have everyone else decide.
Yes, we'll see if it was really a little pink lipstick or something else.
I kept expecting Eric the whole time going, "Would you do me? I'd do me. I'd do me so hard." Yeah.
I agree with Joseph about the killer. After all of that, you know, you have to feel sorry, a little bit sorry for the guy. He's kind of, I mean, for a serial killer, but he's kind of faked his own death. He's escaped from a mental asylum, faked his own death, escaped the police. He's gone all the way to Australia to kill his wife, and he gets there. Just as soon as he gets in the house, he gets bumped off by the nerd.
So it is anticlimactic. There should have been a bigger probably showdown if they were intent on killing off his character. It would have made more sense to have a bigger showdown, I suppose, Freddy versus Jason style thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If they were fighting over who gets the right to kill PJ Souls, that would have made.
I have a hard time believing the her husband, after killing a prostitute and probably killing a couple other people and stalking her and getting away. I have a hard time believing that any sane police officer would not put her in protective custody and not say to her, hey, look, you can't go fleeing the country. He could come after you. We need to put you in protective custody until he's caught. I mean, I know he faked his death later in the film, but still, this is she left before they discovered that. So, I mean, these cops are so inept.
Yeah, but she had her a bottle of Windex to protect her. So
that's true. Yeah.
But
she gets rid of streaks.
But yes, a gloriously trashy fun. So if you haven't seen it,
loved it. Absolutely loved it.
So if you haven't seen it, you can watch the whole thing on YouTube as well. Someone's uploaded it.
Justin.
Well, it's not.
How dare you promote piracy?
Well, it's not really piracy, is it? Well, it kind of is.
I think it's probably public domain. Probably.
Yeah, yeah. I would think at this point, if it's on YouTube and no one's said anything about it. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the background, shall we? Because then we can. It's a little.
That will take about 5 seconds.
Yes. Okay. Well, has anyone got Nathan? How about you? What have you got for us?
I talked to PJ Souls, and she did say that she did not like her hair in this movie, so she agrees with
her
comments about it. Yep.
I remember when we met her, we had a Grant with us, and he was just he didn't want to take a picture with her because he was so nervous. We had to like kind of coerce him into taking a picture.
Oh, so cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you did ask her about her hair in this.
I did. Well, actually, I think she brought it up because I asked her about this movie because I'd seen it not long before I'd met her, and it was just kind of in passing, and she just made some comment like, oh God, my hair.
Okay, so.
She remembers her hair in that movie.
So I wonder if she was, she was forced that, you know, it's part of a contract to have that perm, or, you know.
But, yeah, because like you guys have said, like towards the end of the movie, her hair is not really a perm anymore.
It's like a mullet.
Yeah, she has an Olivia Newton-John type style going on when she gets to Australia, which is apt. I suppose.
You know, I thought, you know, if she didn't have a bottle of Windex handy, she could have just did like a curly from the Three Stooges and kind of battle ram someone with her hair into their stomach.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, that's a good bit of tidbit, a good little bit of background there, Nathan. Is that everything you got for us, or have you got any other?
No, I don't think I have anything else.
Okay, well, Eric, how about you?
Okay, well, I've only got a few bits and pieces because it's quite scant. Well, you'll probably have loads now to prove me wrong, but I couldn't find that much about it. It was shot under the title of Voyeur in combination of Dallas and Sydney, Australia. I could find no crossover between any of the actors of this film and Houseboat Horror, which I was shocked at because there's usually Australia has quite a small pool of actors to pull from, and I thought there would be some people would be in the two films, but I couldn't find any. The Screen Australia website and also AustralianTelevision.net list this as a TV movie, which I know that some people... I was saying earlier, it looks like a bit of a TV movie, but as you were saying in your review, Justin, the ample amounts of thrusting buttocks would suggest otherwise. So I don't know, because the background is so hazy on this, I'm not quite sure if that's true or not. And the music was done by Brian May, who for a long time, whenever I saw his credit on these movies, I assumed it was the guy from Queen, but it's not. It's actually an Australian composer. Incidentally, the guy from Queen, the Brian May from Queen, has a perm to match that of PJ Souls, but that's a different matter. So this Brian May had done the score for films like Road Games. He did Freddy's Dead as well, Turkey Shoot, Road Warrior, Patrick, lots of genre classics in there. Well, apart from Freddy's Dead, which is not a genre classic by any means. The only other information I have is that it was released on video in the UK in 1990, and the BBFC insisted on 17 seconds of cuts, which I imagine would have been, I didn't get the details, but I imagine it would have been to the Debbie Sue Voorhees murder scene, I would think. But that's all I have, I'm afraid, Justin.
Okay, well, thank you, Eric. What about you, Joseph? You got anything for us?
Well, Eric covered most of it. The only thing I found, and really is not much about this film out there. Apparently it was filmed in 84, but not released on video in the States, at least, until 1991. What I read was released in video in the UK and 89, but you know, this is going by kind of IMDb standards, which, you know, take with a grain of salt. But no, that's pretty much all I could find, other than the things Eric's already covered. So.
Well, it's kind of covered pretty much. To say it's not a film that's got a lot of background to it that we can find. I mean, I've actually got the American video here. Do you remember last time I shook it? So you're trying to guess which movie we're going to cover. It came out on the label here is Intermedia Video, 1990 copyright. So it sounds like it's a film that kind of sat on the shelf, but I think very possibly what the film, because many genre films back in the 70s and I'm sure in the 80s as well, were shot with different versions for different markets. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was shot as a TV movie for Australia, but they added in the extra buttocks and blood and stuff
with 25% more buttocks.
Exactly, of course. But then Australian TV back then may have been a little bit more liberal. I don't know. It did get a review in Variety, I was able to see. I'd love to get a subscription to Variety, but it costs huge amounts of money to sort of, you know, to trawl through it, even as like a not-for-profit thing. But you can see little snippets, and one of them, it said Variety called it a mildly suspenseful thriller, and I think that was dated back in around the time it was made, so it did get reviews and it probably did look for distribution but didn't get it. And of course at this time, even with PJ Soul's name above the credits, it was kind of, you know, slasher movies weren't, you know, unknown, non-franchise slasher movies in 1983-84 were not being picked up as much as they would have been a few years before. To be honest, that's pretty much, I don't think there's anything else. Obviously we mentioned Debbie Sue Voorhees, obviously was in Friday the 13th Part 5, the director, as is also mentioned, he co-wrote Nightmares, which is kind of similarly trashy kind of slasher movie. Apparently he was very a big fan of Halloween, unsurprisingly. So that's kind of like a lot of his inspiration for making this and casting PJ Souls in it. That's it, really. I mean, the Australian actors are kind of relatively well known down under. The husband's actually Australian. I don't know if you noticed, in his accent kept on slipping between Texan and Australian in the scenes at the beginning. But that's all we've got. So if anyone else has got any more tidbits, or if you are in Australia and you know more about this movie, then do, you know, write in and let us know. But that was Innocent Prey. So before we get on to some other feedback, if we've got any other feedback, Joseph, do you want to do the boards? Because I know some people have made some comments about the film.
Sure. Let's see. Adam Dillon says, just watched Innocent Prey on YouTube, and here are my takeaways. Jewel of the Gods looks like an amazing film. I don't know what he's talking about there.
That's on that print, there's a trailer for a film called Jewel of the Gods before Innocent Prey starts.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like a very cheap Raiders of the Lost Ark type ripoff. So.
Okay, I gotcha. He says the picture of Kathy's parents was the funniest part of the movie. Kathy is stalked by two serial killers in this film, but she manages to take everything in stride and with a smile on her face. Does anybody wear a cowboy hat that fits in this film? Debbie Sue Voorhees was totally faking it during the hotel sex scene. Eric, what did you think of those butt cheeks?
They're okay. Need more.
It's not really his type.
Need more flesh.
And hair, maybe.
Yeah.
And finally, did anyone see the sign of the prison that says you're not getting out of here unless you jump this 6-foot fence?
It was kind of an easily escapable prison, in fairness.
Yeah. All in all, a decent slasher. Thanks for the recommend. Is the mutilator on your guys' radar? And I can answer that and say it most likely is on our radar.
It is indeed.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see. David Cook says, hang on just a second here. Let me do this. David Cook says, PJ, I totally adore you, but your hairstyle in this is pants. The movie itself is quite good, but feels more like a Women in Peril television movie or even a gallo than a slasher film. Barring the Hotel Razor murder, there is a distinct lack of the usual sleaze and gore. Not that this is a bad thing, but and the movie has some nice scares. The version I saw on YouTube had a jaw-droppingly awful trailer for, of all things, a South African Indiana Jones knockoff. Ah, there they go. If I've learned anything from Innocent Prey, it's that they speak English in Australia. I did not know that. I'm glad he picked up on that. let's see. Who's next? Don Anelli says, it's a solid and enjoyable enough effort, a bit too thrillerish for my taste, but I've certainly seen worse efforts out there. Could have used more gore in the kills. Mitch King says, this is one of those elusive slashers that has escaped me. I need to seek counsel from the baby Jesus and rectify that. Simon Logan says, this time I'm actually going to make a point of watching the movie before the podcast comes out so I can leave thoughts. And he never left any thoughts. So I'm wondering, did you watch it, Simon Logan? And what did you think, Simon Logan? Please let us know, Simon Logan.
I like Simon Logan.
Yeah, Simon Logan.
I like Simon Logan's name.
Yeah. Simon Logan. Mike Alishan says, the main killer in this movie is PJ Soul's hair.
Okay. It's killer hair.
Yeah. David Cook again says, is there a behind-the-scenes story of PJ punching out the hairdresser? And that's all the Facebook feedback we have.
Okay, right. Well, fantastic. Well, actually, I'm just going to play This Is How to Get in Contact with the Show. So,
the content of this podcast was provided by Justin Kurzweil, Eric Frillfall, Nathan Johnson, and Joseph Henson. If you enjoy our program and are willing and able to provide a donation, please visit us on Patreon and become a content designated subscriber. That's patreon.com/thehysteriacontinues. For non-subscriber PayPal donations and general feedback, our address is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. To listen and interact, simply search for The Hysteria Continues on iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Susie versus Toya forever.
And just like to say a quick thank you to the people that have signed up to the Patreon to give us a little bit of a throwback for us doing the show. We very much appreciate it, all eight of you. Hopefully we'll get into double figures soon. Say the money kind of goes to help the running cost of the show and also kind of keeps Eric and Chunky Kit Kat. So if you could throw a few pennies or cents our way, then obviously we'd very much appreciate it. So the Patreon, just go to patreon.com, I kind of guess, and search for Hysteria Continues. Is that right, Joseph?
That is right, Justin.
Okay, well, thank you, Joseph. So, patreon.com.
So / Simon Logan.
Yes, we're thinking about you, Simon Logan, so hopefully see your name on there soon. Simon, poor Simon's going to get a complex. But feedback. We do have some feedback. We've got a voicemail, so shall we play that? A very rare thing. So here
yes,
is.
Please, Justin.
Okay, Eric, here we go.
Hey, Hysteria Continues, guys. This is Jay the Haunt Cub calling in / writing, I guess, since you don't have a phone line. I'm sending this as an attachment. Just got back from Monster Mania 36 this weekend in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. It was a lot of fun. Super, super packed. Tons of people. I think the main draw was the kids from Stranger Things, the TV show, as well as John Cusack was the headliner for the show. But it was almost out of control crazy. Still had a great time. Got a couple signatures that I've been wanting. Anyway, I wanted to thank you guys again for sort of getting me back into the slasher subgenre. I was always a horror fan, but I don't think I appreciated slashers back in the day as a kid like I do when I'm rewatching some of these now. So I really appreciate that. I wanted to bring up a slight, because I hear you guys talk about John Waters all the time, just a slight connection for me, because I grew up in Baltimore, which is where a lot of the Waters films took place. I have a few little tenuous connections to him. I actually auditioned for the movie Crybaby, which I didn't get. It was really for just sort of background people, for dancers and stuff. This was back when I was in college. I didn't get the part, and ironically, I've actually never watched the movie, so I don't even know how good or bad it is. When I went to see, oh God, the Waters movie with Melanie Griffith and, I can't think of what it was called. Cecil B. Demented. That was it. Waters was actually in the theater, at the Charles Theater, down in the front row when it first ran there. So that was kind of cool. It's directly across the street from Club Charles, which is a hangout of his. I've also seen him in Provincetown before as well. Anyway, that's pretty much it. Just wanted to call and say hi. Loving the show. Oh, I did just finish, because I started the back catalog, I did just finish number 70, Crinoline Head, and the Skypiness in that is unbelievably funny. Hopefully, as I work my way further in, you don't have any more that are quite that Skypey. I do subscribe to the podcast, so I have heard all the more recent ones, but I'm still catching up. I listen to a couple a week. Anyway, take care, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, thank you, Jay. Thanks for getting in contact. Mm-hmm. And thanks to, you know, it's a shame you didn't get a part in Crybaby. It's not one of John Waters' best movies. It's not one I return to very often, but it was okay. But yeah, that's always cool to hear. And I'm glad you had a good time at the horror convention. I'm sure one day.
Yes, I'm friends with Jay actually on Facebook, and he got to meet Ted White, who was Jason in Final Chapter, and Nick Castle, of course, famous for being the Shape in the first Halloween.
Excellent. Well, who knows? If we got a millionaire Patreon supporter, we could be on a panel at one of the horror cons at some point.
Yeah, we need to do a video cast of all four of us in the same room. Eric with his shirt off.
Yeah. Well, my shirt is off now.
Is it?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Eric.
Well, you see, I have to close the windows in my bedroom to do this, and it gets too hot and steamy.
Oh. Well, there's a mental image for you, everyone, dear listeners. But
I don't know the Skypiness of the Crinoline episode. I can't really remember. Although the worst I remember it being was for a Bloody Moon, where we were here for about 5 hours.
I think Crinoline Head is when it kept repeating. I think that's where that classic thing came
from. Oh, the classic.
Yeah.
We've actually, I mean, touch wood or whatever, it's kind of, we've not actually had too much in the way of Skype problems in recently, have we?
No.
Just vague kind of
we'll hear echoes, but they don't actually come out on the podcast. So
yeah.
And they seem to disappear pretty fast.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, it's kind of, when we're doing a commentary, that would be the worst thing, because that would be an absolute nightmare, wouldn't it, if the commentaries we start
to resync it up and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea how we get through those commentaries with no problems. Yeah. It's a miracle, actually.
As Culture Club once sang.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you again, Jay. And,
thanks, Jay.
So do we have a we got, yes, some more feedback, don't we?
I do. I have one here, and it's got a spoiler in it for Deep Red. So if you haven't seen Deep Red, close your ears. This is from, let me scroll down, it is from Jay Prowse. He says, hi all, sorry a bit late to the party, I've just discovered your podcast, so playing catch up. Essential listening in the car now, so keep up the good work. I recently listened to your Deep Red and Eyeball episode, which inspired me to play the Arrow Blu-ray Italian language extended version of Deep Red for my wife to see whether she, like a number of your friends and family, noticed the face in the mirror when Mark Daly enters the apartment following the murder of Helga Ullman. Really annoyingly, she did. She did say that it didn't ruin the movie for her, but I'm not convinced. It's absolutely mind-blowing when the killer is revealed, and as the viewer, you've missed such a revealing clue so early in the film. Such a shame that Argento so completely lost it after Opera, which poses the question, why do great creative directors fall so far? It can't simply be down to budget alone, which seems a cop-out excuse. Anyway, my wife hated Suspiria, stating it was all style over substance. I retorted with that the style is the substance, so I think I won that argument. Probably. Anyway, best of British and American. and I think he means Irish as well, to you all. Keep it in your trousers, Jay Prowse.
Well, thank you very much, Jay. Yes.
Yes. Because I think, Joseph, you said you noticed the image of the killer in the mirror at the start of Deep Red when you saw it first.
Yes, I did.
Because I didn't, and it did blow my mind then when I went back and rewound and said, oh, my God, you do see the killer at the start of the film.
I saw it, and I said, was there someone there? But then I kind of forgot about it until the ending, so it didn't really take away from me.
Yeah. So why do creative directors fall so far? I mean, it's happened with a lot of them, with practically all of them, I'd say.
Maybe age has something to do with it.
Probably, yeah. I mean, John Carpenter really hasn't done anything that interested me since probably Prince of Darkness.
Argento's been doing this since like the early 70s, and so, you know, he's probably old and tired. Give the guy a break.
It's also the money kind of, you know, the budget's kind of reduced as well, which kind of probably didn't help.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems of Argento was that although I love Demons and his films, when he started using all the heavy metal stuff in his films, and he's trying to appeal to a certain age group and audience, and I think he kind of got trapped by that. And he got the people who liked his first films when he was like the kind of the big, you know, the new, you know, enfant terrible or kind of Italian genre cinema back in the early 70s, it was kind of like it was fashionable to go to see an Argento movie in Italy in the early 70s, so you'd get, you know, people would go and see it, but he fell out of fashion, and I think that's unfortunately, you know, is what can happen.
And the same thing happened to Ken Meyer. I mean, he did the classic Terror at Ten Killer, and then like he just lost it after that.
Indeed.
It'll never be as good as that.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. Never.
No. So, well, they say everyone's got one good story in them, don't they? Hopefully he'll one day come out with one.
Who, Argento or Ken Meyer?
Ken Meyer.
All right.
Ken Meyer should be hired to direct the Suspiria remake.
Yeah.
Now, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, thank you, the other Jay.
Look, Susie Banion, we've got serious talking to do.
Hey, babe, you and me got to dance.
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine? In a different alternative reality, it would be interesting. But, Nathan, you've got some feedback as well, haven't you?
I do. Okay, so this one says, so I had a baby about 6 months ago, and for the first 2 or 3 months of her life, the only way she would sleep through the night is if she was lying on my chest. I'm just sending you guys a message to say thank you for helping me through that sleep-deprived time in my life. I generally put one podcast on, and by the time the baby would wake up, I'd have listened to about 4. I think you're all legends, and every time I go to the toilet, I sing that delightful cat song. Thanks Don't again, lads. It's from Dylan Nikolovsky.
Excellent. Well, thank you,
Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan. And just for you.
Yay. Love it.
It's something about podcasts and cats, isn't there? Yeah. I listen to there's a podcast called My Favorite Murder, which is two comedians talking about their basically favorite murders each week. At the end of it, they've one of them's got a cat called Elvis, and she says, "Elvis, do you want a cookie?" And then he does does go meow sound. So it's something cats and podcasts go together, don't they?
Your cat impression was phenomenal, Justin.
Was it? Did you like it? Oh.
Yeah. I thought it was catastrophic.
Oh, aww.
That's my joke of the week.
So. Oh, well, thank you. So, now we've got the final question, haven't we, of the quiz, which is winner takes all.
Isn't that no, Justin.
I think
stop
Nathan
rewriting the rules. Yeah.
I think before I get to that, Nathan had something he wanted to.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I do. It's a little thing I'm going to add once in a while. I was very curious about this movie for sure, but it's my little thing that I'm going to call after the credits, and I want to know what you guys think happened after the end credits for this movie. Do you think that dude like was crazy and was going to try to kill her, or was it just a coincidence that he grabbed the razor and seemed very sinister?
I thought maybe he just needed a shave.
Yeah.
That's all you thought?
Yeah.
I thought that he's going to cut her hair.
Yeah, he says, look, enough is enough, bitch.
Yeah, he said, like, we're going to get together, but you can't keep that hair.
Yeah, because if this was filmed in 83, the short hair was in, so you could have given her maybe an Annie Lennox look. And then they would have lived happily ever after. And she would have said fair dinkum a lot because she was now living in Australia.
Yeah. What do you think?
And they would have had barbecues with Alan Dale.
Nathan, what was your thoughts?
I was thinking I need a jingle for like my, because Eric has a great jingle. The cat has a jingle.
Yeah.
I need something
for
after the credits. Yeah. After the credits.
Okay. Well, do you want to come up
with
something?
Maybe I'll sing.
Yeah, well, come up with something and send it to me. We can have it as a... I mean, we've got loads of sound effects. We can have, like, I don't know... Or... you know, I mean, whatever. The world is your oyster, Nathan. So
no, well, I love, though, that when I said I would sing, you gave this long pause and you're like, okay. yeah, we'll have some clips we can play instead.
Yeah, well, how about even... Well, you could even ask a listener to come up with a jingle.
There you go. Send me a jingle, listeners, for after the credits.
Exactly. It sounds very much like a kind of those late night talk shows you used to have in the 80s when it'd be like, you know, two people sit down over with a cup, you know, a glass of wine to talk about a book.
Yeah. It's sort of like my Roundtable Algonquin.
Exactly. That's it.
Yeah.
The Albuquerque Roundtable.
Yeah, that really... That stuck around, didn't it?
Well, I had a lot of fun with it, but the problem was coming up with new things. But I think after the credits is something that can always be discussed.
Yes, if there's some kind of final shot, which there tends to be in horror movies,
it'll always work. I think that would be good. And we're talking
about... what happened after the opening credits of Friday the 13th Part 2, Nathan?
Oh, well, I mean, nothing. I mean, there was just basically a big dream sequence.
Yeah.
They all sat around talking about Veronica.
It was actually Jason's dream. People don't really know that, but it was Jason's dream. He was having a good dream.
Okay. Well, I think it'll definitely be interesting. I mean, we've got we can have a think for we're going to be choosing another film shortly. But Joseph, you've got something as well, haven't you? You've got the other part of the game.
Oh yeah. Let's see. I do have a new question. Someone got the last one right. It was Declan Gallagher got a point for Fatal Frames. He guessed that correctly. So here's a new question. Currently, the scores are Robert Ciardello with 1, Tristan Comer with 2, Declan Gallagher with 1, and Joshua Gratton with 1. And the new question, or the new clues, are roommates, hot RCA property, and snow fence.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I'm not going to say it.
The hot RCA property sounds familiar.
Is it Slaughter High?
That's it.
There you go.
I won the quiz, finally. Okay. But talking of next time, whose turn is it next time?
It's me.
It's Eric. So as
as this was quite obscure, Axum was quite obscure, Night Warning, semi-obscure, I'm going super-duper mainstream, I'm afraid, with my next one. I had a look back through the catalogue to see when we last covered a film of this series, and it was last May, so I think we're due to do part 3 of Nightmare on Elm Street. Dream.
Oh, fun.
Yes, and apparently, Nathan, I was looking at the description of our... Freddy's Revenge episode, and it says perhaps the beginning of a feud between Justin and Nathan happened on that episode. So I think that was the start of Rhubarb Lady.
Oh, I might need to go back and re-listen to that.
I think it was the moment where you were doing your recently seen, and you interrupted Justin. Justin hadn't finished.
Oh yes. That was a classic as well. Yeah. A classic moment.
Yes. So yes, we're going for Dream Warriors next.
Excellent.
And I expect Joseph to sing the Dawkins song for us.
Maybe tonight you'll be gone.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well,
my falsetto is not what it used to be. I'll have to squeeze my
Justin,
giblet.
You like Dawkins, don't you? They're a goth band, aren't they?
I don't even know who they are. Is that I know they did. Aren't they black? Isn't it a black?
No,
band? They're very white and have hair to match PJ Souls.
Hair metal band.
But wasn't there a kind of there was a song by those other songs in that film, wasn't there? And I thought the I'm thinking about.
I don't think there isn't Dream Warriors. I think it's from 4 onwards they started having sort of introducing hip hop and
okay, Latin. That's what maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But But yeah, well, okay. Well, talking of songs, we're going to be playing out with some Britney Spears.
Of course, we're playing out with Britney Spears.
Which I thought was just quite apt, kind of like, "Oops, I did it again," and I'm not so innocent, and all that kind of thing. Like poor
Hit
PJ
me, baby,
Souls.
One more time.
Exactly. Yeah. So a little mega mix of Britney to take us out. So thank you.
You should have played her classic album track, "Electric Door Handles."
What's that? I've never heard of that. I've only know two Britney Spears songs. They're both
the same. She has a song called "Electric Door Handles," and it's about door handles that are electrified.
Okay.
See,
it would have been more apt.
Yeah. I would have picked "Give Me a Head of Hair, Long Beautiful Hair."
Well, she shaved all her hair off, didn't she?
No, I'm talking about the perm.
Yes.
The song I would have picked. Yeah.
Oh, is it? She got another. Well, I didn't know all this stuff. I don't. You see, I only know two songs.
Justin, I'm only making up the fact that she has a song called "Electric Door Handles."
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not.
You don't think there's actually a song called "Electric Door Handles"?
Well,
do
I don't know. In the world where you've got, like, you know, ridiculous kind of songs by people, you know, Toya springs to mind.
Hey.
Anything could be possible, couldn't it? So anyway. Okay, well, thank you for listening to The Hysteria Continues. We'll be back next time with Eric's Choice and back to Elm Street. So join us again. So thank you for listening. Say goodbye to the good people.
Bye. Enjoy Britney Spears.
Bye.
Nathan, you haven't said goodbye yet.
Oh, goodbye.
Thank you.
So rude, Nathan.
I'm so upset.
Can you hear that? That's my underpants.
Hey, underpants, where'd you learn how to dance?
Ooh. That something wasn't right. I thought it was time to let you win, Eric. I need a little bit of a boost up.
How old are you? Grow up. Go to your room.
Is that the one where the killer puts a bucket over someone's head?
I love George Tropicana. What a nice name. Is he Cuban?
He thinks I'm super cool.